5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to notice its eyes. Its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister. The look it was giving me.
What are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better... Sheriff, see ya!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show. Welcome to the show, everyone. Hope everyone's weekend's going great. Got a great show planned for everyone. Tonight I'm going to be speaking with Tim Sermons, and Tim's actually a researcher out there in Texas. He's right along there side by side with Bob Garrett, and Tim actually started out in the BFRO. He had an encounter prior to that, but he went to the BFRO, worked with them, and then decided to part ways, and now he's down in Texas. So he's got a lot of encounter stories that he's going to be sharing tonight. So everyone, I hope you're buckled in. It's going to be a great show. And I want to welcome Tim to the show.
Oh, well, thanks. It's my pleasure to be here.
Can you talk about your encounter that you had when you were a child, kind of your first experience with running into a Sasquatch, and kind of walk us into what you're doing and then tell us about your encounter?
It's probably around 11, I guess. We lived rurally about 10 miles out of town. We had 6 acres that backed up to Passatchie National Forest. And for those of you that don't know Passatchie National Forest, it is a national forest that basically takes 80% of the state right through the center all the way almost to Arkansas. And, you know, I didn't really think much about Bigfoot. I've seen In Search Of and, you know, some of the Bigfoot books and stuff like that as a kid in school, and checking out books in the library about this thing, you know, various other monsters and stories and things like that. Well, basically, I guess one night, I couldn't even tell you the day or time, really. I think it was probably spring. I woke up, well, I guess let me preface by saying that we had 6 acres. The house was an acre off the road, and then we only had a half acre for the backyard, and then the rest of the land was nothing but woods. We didn't have a real close neighbor. The houses were a great deal apart. And like most country people, we had a street light, you know, a big pole in the backyard that would illuminate. And it would outline my window. And we had those big, tall, skinny windows in the house. And I woke up one night with some sort of noise. And I'm laying there in bed, and I'm looking at the window, and I see this big, massive shadow walk past the window. Describe that shadow. It was as tall as the window. And it was just a walk right by. It had a forward head. Its head was, like, leaning forward, and it looked like it had messy hair. Like hair on your head, but it was like messy. And I'm sitting there as an 11-year-old kid. I'm like, who's in my yard? So I get out of bed and I go around to the back porch and I open the door and I go outside and I look. And as I'm looking, the street light is kind of in that area. So I'm looking off to my left at the corner of the fence there, and I see a big, massive person. So I thought, just step over the chain link fence like it was nothing and walk into the woods. I run back in the house, I go wake my dad up, He gets up, he walks out there and looks. He goes, "There's nobody out here, son. You're just dreaming. Go back to bed." So I went back to bed. But I went back the next morning and I told my dad. He asked me about it and I said, "Well, what do you think it, who do you think it was?" I said, "I don't think it was too big to be anybody. It was a big, big, big person or something. It had, you know, this big broad shoulders and it just stepped across the chain link fence." And I said, "I think it was a Bigfoot." And he said, "No, son, there's no such thing as Bigfoot." So anyway, I kind of just dropped it at that, and we never brought it up again. It was like several years before I even considered even thinking about Bigfoot.
So the thing walks across your yard and just steps over a chain link fence. Was it, I would imagine it's a tall chain link fence.
Well, yeah, you know, probably what, chest high, so what, 4.5 to 5.5 feet tall, maybe, chain link fence.
Wow, and it just stepped over.
Spikes on the end.
Yeah. Did you guys have any more incidences around the property?
No, not that I can remember. The only other time that I can think of anything very, very strange ever happening is we were popping fireworks. It was like New Year's or Christmas. It was one of those. It was during that time of year. We were popping fireworks at a bonfire in the backyard. My oldest brother was there, and my dad and my cousins, and we heard this the horrible scream come out of the woods. And my oldest brother just told me that was just a cat. Just don't worry about it, you know. And that's the only other thing that I could ever remember happening. Those two things, me having the fighting and then that vocalization that I heard that night.
Did you have any other incidents that's happened prior to joining the BFRO?
I really haven't. And I got interested in the BFRO. You know, I guess the one positive thing that I can say about Rick Dyer is when they pulled off that hoax, of course, it sparked my interest again because I was one of the people that was thinking, oh, crap, maybe these things really are, they do exist, you know. So I started searching online, and, of course, I found the BFRO, so then I got involved in that and actually went on an expedition. I went to Missouri in 2008, I think, and had a blast up there. There were some interesting things that happened up there, and I just kind of caught the fever from there. Came back. I learned a lot from those guys, and I came back and I started looking at topo maps in my area. I started going exploring, and I'd go a lot by myself. Didn't know really what I was doing, but I just, you know, walked down this trail, that trail during the day, and just got around. Just everything would look like it was, you know, had a good potential to have activity from what I was learning. I then went on a second expedition. Nothing happened on that expedition. This was in Georgia. And then I went on another expedition to Oklahoma, which was very, very active. There were a lot of vocalizations and things like that that were gotten from that area. After my third expedition, I actually became an investigator at the FRO and started being able to do reports. I did most of the reports. Well, for a time, I did a lot of the reports from Mississippi. And I did some in Oklahoma, and I did some in Louisiana.
One of the things I wanted to have you go into for the show, I know you and I just talked about it, if you would kind of go into some of the strangest reports that you investigated, some of the odd ones. I know we had just talked about three of them. Can you tell the audience about some of the strange reports or some of the more memorable ones that you went and investigated?
You know, the way they're, well, I guess I need to kind of tell you how their system does. People put in reports and then it gets kind of filtered into whatever area you're signed up for. It's divided by state. So then you get a report that comes across in your state, and you go and you do a preliminary. You read what the person wrote, and then there's another section. It's kind of like a form that is pretty detailed, like GPS location, you know, time of day. It's pretty specific. So I started getting some of these reports in and reading them. Of course, you know, you get the bullcrap reports. You know, I saw Sasquatch on a unicorn running across the road, so you just have to dismiss that stuff. But then you run across the one that you're like, huh, well, let me call this guy, and or let me contact this guy and see if we can talk. And usually it's done by email initially. I guess one of the very memorable ones I did that had to do with a deer hunter. And the deer hunter, he is actually from Memphis, and he hunted in Mississippi. And he had his own little private Idaho, if you will, on where he hunted deer. And if anybody knows anything about deer hunters, once they have their little honey hole, they don't want to share it, they're not going to give it up, and they're going to always hunt there. And this guy had just that. I mean, he said he's killed deer out of there that were, you know, 10 point, 12 point, score 150, you know, easily. Good deer. Well, he starts off by telling me that he had gone to this spot there, and it's down in the headwaters near the Tallahatchie River, and he put the climbing stand in the day before. When he's walking in, he hears a wood knock, and he's like, huh, that's interesting. And he, after he set his deer stand up, his climbing stand, he left and waited to come back the next morning. He got there just before daybreak, walked in there, got in his climbing stand, climbed up, and he's sitting there, and he goes, it's just about daylight, you know, and he starts seeing this big bush start moving about 200 yards away. And he's thinking, oh, great, here's going to be my first deer. That's a deer over there making a rub. So he picks up his binoculars and he starts finding what he's looking at. And he sees what he first describes as a bear. And he's like, oh, well, that's a bear, you know, a big black bear. But he said as he was looking, his binoculars fogged up. So he put those down and he went to his rifle scope. Well, he went to his rifle scope and he saw the whole side of the head. He saw the ear, the close cropped ear. And he saw this big massive thing just squatted down on the ground. And it was doing something with the tree, making it move, and it was doing something on the ground. Well, he couldn't believe what he was seeing. So he stood up to get a better view with his rifle. When he did that, the stand must have made a little squeak or a noise or something. Well, the thing stopped doing what it was doing, stuck its nose in the air and started turning its head. And then it turned around and looked at him. It stood up on two legs and ran as he's facing it to his left. And he was like, my God, what the hell did I just see? Now you have to remember when you're talking to these guys, this guy's voice was shaking. I mean, he was legitimately scared even retelling the story. And I know Wes, you said that people will a lot of times do that when you start talking to them, especially on the radio show. And I've even heard it on your show where they get into it and it's almost like they're reliving it. It's almost like a PTSD kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
What this guy was like.
Yeah. And so he saw it actually run on two legs. It wasn't like it took off on four legs. This thing took off running on two legs.
Yeah, it stood up. And now you got to remember, it's 200 yards away. He's looking at it through a rifle scope. And the thing stands up and runs away on two legs. So I asked the guy, I'm like, what are you doing? What'd you do then? He goes, I sat down and I thought about it. And he goes, I know I'm not crazy. That was no bear. I'm not crazy. And I said, well, what'd you do then? He goes, I climbed down. I said, were you going to leave? He goes, nope. I was going to go over there, and I had every intention of shooting this thing, every intention of killing it, because I wasn't going to be made a fool of, and I didn't know what this thing was, and I was going to kill it. So he walks the 200 yards over to where this thing was, and he looks down, and he sees a track where it had slid in the mud there as it ran off. He said it was the biggest track he'd ever seen. He could put both his feet inside the track. He started to go in the direction that it went, and he heard another wood knock, and it came from the direction that this alleged creature went. But to his right, on the other side, he heard a whoop, and he said, I realized then that I was not alone. There were more than one, and as big as that thing was, I was not hanging around to see what that was. So I got out of there. I tried and tried to get that guy to meet me. I tried and tried to get out there. He told me where the location was, so I had to go by myself to go check this place out. And it did not disappoint me at all. I'm not even sure I found the exact place he was talking about. You know, here you got a big bad deer hunter that's been out all his life, and he doesn't even hunt anymore. He will not go back to that spot. He wouldn't even meet me out there in the daytime just to even, you know, go through the scene with him. Would not do it. So that was a good, that was a very, very good report. We didn't actually talk about this one, but the other, I guess the deer hunting or the hunter stories are the ones that intrigue me the most. Because the deer hunters or the hunters are the ones that will give you the most crap about this, but they're also the ones that their reports are probably the most substantive.
I agree with you 100% because a deer hunter, or not even just your hunter in general, you know, people talk about, because we've had police officers on the show, we've had doctors on the show, we've had judges on the show. For me, I love to hear from everyone, but my ears perk up really quick when it's a hunter. Because a hunter knows what they're looking at. You know, they're not going to mistake it for something else. And they're out there all the time. And so, to me, it lends a lot of credibility when you get a report from a hunter.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, the next report I got is a hunter report as well. This was a woman, female hunter, and this is in southern Mississippi. I did not actually get the report, but it was, I know it was done through BFRO, but it was one that, or maybe, it may not have been through them, it may have been through another group. But it was a similar situation. This woman's in her deer stand, and she's on the edge of a green field, and she's sitting there watching this young doe. She wasn't going to kill the doe. She was just watching it. And she looked down to see a Bigfoot below her tree stand, crouched. And it stealthily moved to the edge of the green field, and the deer got a little bit closer. Well, this Squatch leapt and grabbed that deer and put it in like a bear hug and killed it that way. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of that.
It had grabbed the deer and put it in a bear hug and killed it?
Yeah.
I've never heard that either.
You usually hear about them breaking the neck, breaking the leg, breaking the neck, that kind of thing. But yeah, this one did that, and the most interesting thing is what it did is it picked it up under its arm, like a sack of groceries, walked back to where the woman was in her deer stand, went behind her into the brush, and threw it down in where she could begin to hear it eat this deer. And she did not come out of the stand for several hours. They actually had to come get her. The people she was with had to come get her and get her down. Pretty horrific deer hunting story right there.
Yeah, talk about PTSD.
Yeah, there's the famous one in Texas with the hog hunter. That was probably one of the first ones that got me interested when I started researching Bigfoot. I was reading the database on all these different, groups' websites and stuff. And I ran across that one. That was pretty cool. It was very similar. But it brings you to commonalities.
The encounter you're just talking about, was that the one where the hunter was in his deer stand and he saw it pick up hogs and smash it against trees and then eat them?
It carried it off, yeah. That's the one I was talking about. The interesting thing is, you take that report, you take the one of the first one that I said, and you take this and you look at the commonalities. What was the creature doing? Well, in two of those incidents, the creature was actually hunting. The other one, I don't know what he was doing, the very first one. He was just over there, I guess, digging in the mud. I don't know. But so now you've got, out of those three reports, you got two commonalities. So that shows you that, yes, these things do hunt. That's kind of how I've taken what I've learned from doing reports. And I was taught by that by, somebody that has done a lot of reports and kind of steered me that direction. If you can, basically the rule of thumb to do when you're doing any report is if you can explain it by any normal means, then you have to explain it that way. It's when you can't explain it, you got the mystery, and then you've got what we're looking for. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but you get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, no, I understand completely. You want to rule everything out first. I mean, you don't want to go straight to it being, hey, I saw a Bigfoot, or hey, I saw a Sasquatch. It's interesting. A lot of people I've spoken to, and I'm sure you ran across this, Tim, when you were talking with people, most people won't really come out and say, hey, I saw a Bigfoot, or hey, I saw a Sasquatch. They'll usually refer to it as a monster, or they'll say, I saw this, I don't know really what it is. Those are the ones that really fascinate me, because they're describing a Sasquatch, but they don't assign it that title because they've never seen it before. They don't know really what they're looking at. They think they have an idea, it's probably this, but a lot of people, I think, are looking for confirmation of, what did I see? Tell me I'm not crazy, and what did I see? You had a report you're telling me about where a guy saw one in his backyard, and it was kind of interesting because no one had lived in that house. Do you want to talk about that report?
Yeah, this is another one out of Mississippi. It's northern Mississippi, and he lived out rurally, and he was a long-haul truck driver, so he wasn't home a lot. And it was his uncle's house. He was a musician that traveled around and whatnot. And when his uncle died or whatever, he just took the place over. He bought the place, took it over. But it had been empty for like 5 years. And again, it backs up to a lot of property. And so actually, I think it actually backs up to a natural preserve or a national preserve or something like that, wildlife refuge or something. This guy didn't think anything about Bigfoot or Sasquatch or anything like that. And he worked all kinds of crazy hours, so he was up at any time he could possibly be up. He has had several encounters when he submitted the report at the time, and the very first one, he was out on his back porch, and he had a shed right over by the work, and he was actually on his back porch, relieving himself off the back porch. he noticed that there was a big man, a huge man, crouched over by his porch. And see, well, what I didn't tell you earlier was, is his neighbor had said that he saw some guy around his house the other night, and he wanted him to be aware about it. You know, he thought maybe a prowler or something was around. So he's out there, and he sees this big, huge man all in black. All black. He thought he was wearing a black jumpsuit, crouched down, looking at him. So he yells at the guy, "Hey, what are you doing over there?" Well, this thing just rises up, just stands up, doesn't use its arm, just rises up from a crouched position, looks at him, and it's just massive. It's taller than the shed. Turns and runs and goes into the woods. Another detail I didn't tell you about this is back there was like a little, not an irrigation ditch, but some sort of runoff ditch that's back there that's probably about 20 feet. This thing jumped across that as it was going into the woods. It just jumped right across it.
That pretty much rules out well, I think standing higher than the shed is probably rules out a man anyway. But now this house, no one had lived in this house for a while, right? I mean, it was like 5 years.
That's right, 5 years. So he had to come in. He was fixing it up, cleaning it up, working on it, you know, whatnot, stuff like that.
Didn't the people prior that lived there think the house was haunted? And why did they think the house was haunted?
You know, he did mention that when I interviewed him too. And it was just because the house would get like flapped, or, you know, you'd hear banging on the door or this or that, just other stuff. And, you know, that alone, you can't just say that that's a Bigfoot or that's Squatch. So I could see where they would have said that. But him having the sighting and everything, that kind of makes you raise an eyebrow.
Yeah, I think it adds to it. I mean, it's kind of like the people I was telling you about down in Texas that, you know, when they first moved in, they thought the place was haunted. And I asked them, why do you think the house was haunted? She said, you know, at night the house would get slapped, or there'd be rocks thrown at the house. It sounded like rocks hitting the house. You know, she goes, we just kind of thought the place was haunted until we saw this thing running back into the forest. But the encounter you were just telling me reminds me of, and I have it in the intro, it's a 911 call, you know, where the guy calls 911. It's in his backyard, and he's saying it's all black and it's huge. And it's the same type of, what I thought was interesting about the encounter, though, is how it stood up. It didn't use its hands. It just went from a crouched position to all of a sudden now it's, boom, it's standing up.
Well, and that's one of the things when I said when you do these reports, you have to find those commonalities. I've heard that often. That they don't have to use their arms to stand up. They just go from a crouch to standing just in one fluid motion. So that's one of the commonalities you can put in there. And that's kind of how I like to take, you know, I'm not with BFR anymore, so I've taken a lot that I've learned from them. And I'm very friendly with a lot of other groups. The GCBR, Mid America, Tesla. I've got a lot of good friends in all those groups. So I do research with them from time to time, including I still do a little bit with BFRO when they're around and things like that. But that's the way I've taken my research, is that you have to look for those common things that are in all reports that are legitimate. You know, you have to be able to pick those out, and it just takes time and experience to see what you're looking for and things like that.
Well, and I'm kind of curious, and I want you to talk about, you went out with the BFRO on an expedition with them, and I know you try and help, you know, you still have friends in the BFRO, and, you know, the BFRO, I think, has some good researchers in that group. I think what gets lost sometimes, and I know it's gotten lost on the show, you can't place everyone in the BFRO as just, you can't think moneymaker, or if you have a dislike for moneymaker for whatever reason. You can't then assign everyone in the BFRO as moneymaker, because there are some good people in the BFRO. I know, like, Jim Sherman is one. I love the guys, the sound he puts together, the sounds he is able to capture reminds me of what you guys do down there in Texas. You know, he just does a great job at capturing sound. But you went out with these guys, and you want to talk about the bridge incident?
Yeah, I can, actually. They did two expeditions down here. I'm not gonna talk about the first one. I'll talk about the second one. It was probably fall, early fall. The organizers asked me about areas. Well, first off, I got to talk about Texas in general. when you talk about Texas and you talk about being in the Southwest, as you know, because you've been here, there are other things besides Sasquatch in the woods that you have to worry about. There are snakes,
everything,
dogs.
Like everything. even the rabbits look at you down there.
Even the rats. I mean, we just put the fleers out, and you should have seen the size of this wood rat. It attacked the doggone fleer that we had out in the woods. I was like, you got to be kidding me. It was huge. You thought it was a possum, but it wasn't. It was a dang wood rat.
Jesus. I know you guys are talking about having, I was thinking about coming back down in May or June, and all the stuff that will kill you is out and about then. I'm not sure if I'm man enough to come down there and, you know, I can't be like Bob. He's been bitten, 11, 12 times? I think one bite would be enough for me from a snake.
Yeah, he got a 12th bite last summer, actually, from a canebrake rattlesnake. And the funny thing is he was actually wearing snake boots. And the snake went through his snake boots. They were older snake boots, I'm sure. They were probably about 6 years old. The Kevlar had broken down. What did save him on that was the fang actually just scratched him, so he didn't get a full envenomation, like a full bite. And that probably kept him out of the hospital, but it split it swell up. So, yeah, you didn't have to worry about that stuff. So,
but go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
This particular area, and with them being BFR on an expedition, I'm not going to give them up the primo spots, but I will help them with areas that they'll at least be able to have experiences. So they came down, I went out, me and Bob Garrett went out with them a little bit and showed them, you have this trail, these are all good trails, you can go down them, you know, you can have experiences, but you need to watch out for hogs, you need to watch out for snakes, and you need to watch out for coyotes and things like that, you know. There was one particular trail, and we call it the bridge. For the very first night, there were 14 people. They decided they wanted to go in one group and go down the trail. We did not want to give this trail up, mainly because there is a lot of activity on that trail, and we were actually researching that trail. But we knew they would not get any vocalizations, and the thought process was behind, we're going in there with 14 people, they're not going to get any vocalizations, but they might have a 50-50 shot at actually seeing something. So, but with 14 people, you know, you're thinking, no, there ain't no way in heck you're ever going to see anything. And the trail is wide. So it was the very first night. I'm like, all right, fine, we'll go down there. We got to walk about a half a mile in to where we're going. So we get there. You got 14 people standing along this trail, and some of us are on this bridge. And we're all standing around. There's three people with fleers. Now, only one of those fleers, were recordable. So we're, you know, basically sitting around there, looking. And then the organizer looks at me and says, why don't you do a call and see what happens? I said, okay, well, you know, we really normally don't do calls out here, but okay, I don't mind doing that just to see what happens. So I let off a, you know, and then nothing happened. So I'm standing there looking around, and the organizer's got his clear up, and he's looking, and all of a sudden he says, contact. And I said, what? He says, I got contact. He goes, holy crap, there's two. And he's never seen a Bigfoot before at all. I mean, he's actually looking at two of them through the clear. He's like, holy crap, holy crap, holy crap. And the other guy next to me on my right, he has a clear, and he's looking. He goes, holy crap, I see him too. They're sitting there watching these two things. I said, hey, Mike, let me borrow your clear for 1 second. I just want to clarify what you're looking at. And he's like, okay, here. So I look, and I'm looking at two Sasquatches. One of them's behind the tree, and he leans out and squats down, looks back up, goes behind the tree, and I said, yeah, you're looking at two Sasquatches, here you go, Mike, and I'm getting the clear back. As they're watching them, Mark, who's on the other side, says, hey, one of them's coming around behind us. And the guy with the third clear, I said, Gabe, go ahead and turn around and with your clear and look and see if anything's behind us. Because what that thing was doing, he's actually flanking us and going to come around behind us. And that's because that's some of the behavior that I've seen that they do down here in our research. Well, anyway, you got 14 people up there. The three guys with the FLIR were so ecstatic and so excited about sitting here looking at these things that they never bothered to show anybody else. But and then I only saw it for about I don't know, 8 seconds just to verify that they were looking at, because I wanted to make sure it was without a doubt what they were looking at. I got a little nervous when they came around behind us, and I said, you know, we can't. And there, I have a very good reason for doing what I'm about to tell y'all. So most people are like, well, why'd you leave? Well, there's a reason why I left, and I'm not, probably not going to get into that. I asked everybody, so we just need to get out of here. It's not safe. And we walked on out of the trail. But that night was very special. And I do remember one guy in that whole group said, what about that behavior is aggressive? And I just looked at him and I said, dude, really? I said, you got 14 people out here and you got two Sasquatches that did not care that you were there, and they were coming closer and coming around behind us, and there's still 14 people out there. You tell me that's just normal behavior from all the reports and everything. You tell me that's normal behavior, or is that not aggressive? And he just looked at me.
It's an ambush, almost like they're setting up. You know, they're not going to, a normal animal isn't going to surround you like that unless it has bad intent. A cougar is not going to stalk you in the woods unless it has intent on getting you. It's just not following along like a pussycat. It has bad intent on getting you. And you might agree with me on this, and you can tell me your theory on it, but them coming in closer, not caring that you guys are seeing them, and then one directly goes to the rear of where you guys are at, tells me that, you know, they were cornering you guys and trying to get you guys into a corner. That's pretty ballsy for 14 people, man.
It is very ballsy for 14 people, but like I said, the Squatches in this area seem like they're retarded. And maybe I shouldn't use that word. They're special. They're not,
No, I get
they're
you.
They're very aggressive in that area.
Yeah. Did everyone kind of disagree with you on wanting to leave?
Oh, no. Actually, there were some women that were demanding to leave. I mean, some wanted to stay, and that's fine and everything, but I just couldn't be with. I could not have people out there knowing what I know, and having this. I could not. I would feel responsible for 14 people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you want to leave the meat wagon thing out, or do you want to talk about that?
We can. Well, I can touch on it. The reason that I say these things are aggressive is because from time to time, you can see the sheriff's department in the corner there pulling body parts out of that particular area. So that's another reason why. That was another reason to leave. I had known that going in, but I never said anything to them about that. A little bit I know, the 50-50 shot became 100% shot of seeing something with 14 people going down that trail.
I would say one of the biggest things, and this really isn't something that I've talked about so far, is when I was down there in Texas, you know, the maps that Bob has put together, you guys have put together, are pretty extensive maps. But what's interesting is when you overlay the map with encounters or sightings with missing people, I remember looking at the map, and I'm sitting there looking at this map of sightings, and I'm looking at different sightings, you know, where people have seen them, where Bob's seen them, where you guys have seen them in these other areas. And then you overlay it with the missing people that have been reported. It's pretty disturbing to see it, because where there's missing people, there's hotbeds of sightings in the same area that there's missing people. And so it's not hard to put two and two together on what's happening to people, especially when you have information like that. You know, so I can understand why you'd want to leave the area, you know, knowing what you knew of that area, especially, you know, if something went bad. I know you're the type of guy, Tim, you would have felt responsible for something going bad. Now, when you guys were out, there was an encounter that you, Bob, and Bob's son had. One had actually charged you guys. Do you want to talk about that night?
Yeah, but before I talk about it, I want to clarify something to everybody. And it's a bit of a controversial, and I'm not a controversy, and I'm not going to elaborate at all. And I'm saying this for the record. I was not even in this area whenever there was a film that was put out about a camp that had been demolished. I had I was nothing. I wasn't in any part of that original. I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, you weren't there at the torn-up camp.
But the sighting that you're talking about and the experience that you're talking about happened at that location. And we had gone down there. We had been at a completely different other area. We had clear and we were, you know, doing our thing and listening for sounds and had recordings. I remember it was very cold. So we left that area and we drove down there because they wanted to show me the site. And I wanted to see the site, you know. I mean, who wouldn't want to see the site? To kind of give you a perspective of what it's like to go down there. All right, so you're going 6 miles down a dirt road, and then you go another five, you take a turn, and you go another 5 miles. And then you take a fork, and you go another 8 or 9 miles, and then the road ends. Well, that's the location that we're talking about. We get out of the vehicles, and, you know, I'm getting the, you know, tour, the grand tour. Well, this is where this was, this is where that was, this is this, and I'm sitting there looking at this area, and you want to talk about a spooky place anyway? It's just spooky as hell. If you've ever, I would just wish people could know where it was, and I'm not going to tell them, but I mean, I'm just going to
tell you. It's a very, spooky place. It's a very, very lonely drive there, and it's a very, very lonely spot, and it's spooky during the day. I can't even imagine what it's like at night. During the day, you get a vibe from that area, that's for sure.
Oh, without a doubt. So we're looking around and everything, and we get further in, and we hear a wood knock. And I stop and I look at the guys, and I'm like, "You hear that?" They shake their head, "Yeah." We just kept on going. As we keep going, we get up to where there's a big tree, and there was another tree that was pushed broken, basically leaning across it. All of a sudden. And it's like a dang elephant coming running through the brush, tree snapping and everything else, and just, you can hear the footsteps and everything. Well, the three of us backed up probably a matter of 40 feet in a matter of seconds, and I don't know how we did it. And Bob put the spotlight up. It was actually a green laser. And I think that's the only reason why the thing stopped. Because it stopped right there at that tree, probably about 10 feet away from us. We're all three looking at it. And it's like, and it turns around and walks back into the woods. Very, 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 very frightening. It's probably one of the scariest times that I've had. But what you don't know is we went back the next day. We went back the next day and started looking around in the daylight. And we found 12 to 13 inch tracks by the tree. And then we found 18 inch tracks. So, the theory that we kind of came based on the tracks was there must have been a smaller one there. And mommy or daddy was somewhere else or close by. We come walking in and, it hits the tree and calls for help and then we get charged. And that's our theory on what happened, basically. Another thing that people don't realize, too, about this particular area, when you drive your vehicle down there, and this was a mistake, and I don't ever do this mistake again, I drove down there straight on. There's not a good place to really turn around. Now if I go down there, I go in and I pull in and I back out and turn around so my car's pointed out, because there's only one way to go in and one way to go out.
Yeah, especially there.
That night. So, yeah. We didn't do it that night. But from now on, I mean, ever since then, we go down there, we turn the vehicles around.
Let me ask you, do you think it was just bluff chart? You know, like a lot of different primates will do, like gorillas are notorious for it. Do you think it was bluff charging you guys, or do you think you were just moments away from being ripped apart and the laser stopped it?
I don't know. I like to think that we were bluff charged, but I really don't have an answer to it. I'm just glad it stopped. There's no telling. I don't know what its intention was, to be honest.
At any point, did you guys think, shoot it?
Oh, yeah. Bob was like, get the gun, Travis. Get the gun. Get the gun. It was a 45 caliber pistol. And we didn't. That is exact. That's another reason, by the way, I carry now. I would never carry before. But because of that incident, I always have a gun with me. Bob actually had a gun. Travis had a gun there that night. but it was in the truck. Now it's always on our person somewhere.
In your encounters or times that you've encountered these sayings and a lot of the reports that you've taken, do you think that the chances of coming across these are better at night? Or do you think it's more during the day? Or do you think it's kind of irrelevant?
Honestly, I think it's kind of irrelevant. But you have to understand, though, I had the sighting when I was 12. I didn't see another one, really. Not one that I can say for sure that I saw one until I got to Texas. People say that you're not going to see them in the rain. Okay, whatever. The best sighting I had here was in the rain. The vocalizations, all the best vocalizations I've gotten have been in the rain. Now, it wasn't a downpour thunderstorm, but it was raining. People see them in the daytime. People see them in the night. They see them in the morning. They see them midday. It doesn't matter. I think you're probably more apt to see them at dawn and dusk, just like you do any other animal. But I think encountering them at night is probably, your odds is just as good at night as there are any other time. Day just as good. I mean, we've got just as many daytime sighting reports as we do nighttime sighting reports too.
I think the other thing, too, a lot of people who are listening may not quite understand why someone like yourself or myself or other people who've had encounters go out looking for them because they'll think, what is the end goal? And I know, like in your guys' case, you guys have them on thermals and you guys have videos of them. You guys have hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of audio, some of the best audio out there. Do you ever get to the point where you're tired of getting audio, you're tired of watching them on FLIRs, you're tired of, and you just kind of want to go out and prove it? You just kind of want to go out and prove it to the world?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you do, because we were to the point, I mean, just like, you know, just like the point of on the bridge when I took the FLIR and looked at them. I mean, I didn't know it was amazing that I sat there and said that, yeah, you're looking at two squatches and gave the FLIR back to them. You know, we go out there and we hear two or three wood knocks and we're disappointed, you know? I mean, Leshy, you know, when you were out there, we were like, how many times did we apologize to you? Or did Bob apologize? I'm sorry, it's not as active as it normally is.
Yeah.
And it's
no,
during a monsoon, wasn't it?
Yeah, all of you guys were very apologetic, which made me laugh because there was so much activity out there. I was just blown away by it. You know, the constant vocals and yeah, I will say there's not a lot that shakes your guys' group up. That's for sure. You guys have definitely been, battle tested. I will say that.
Well, you know, that's the other thing too. When I got here, I realized I didn't know anything. And I'm not saying I do now because I really don't. But what I do know is you have to get out and you have to put the hours in. And you have to go where they are. And I had a good friend of mine tell me, he goes, how can anybody, he went to some festival and he's like, all these big name people are out there and they're just sitting in a public campground going, oh, listen to that, listen to that. And he said, I wanted to go out down the trail. And they're like, you're crazy if you want to go down there. And this is a guy from Mississippi. It was a friend of mine. And he goes out by himself. And I tell him he's a little nuts now for going out by himself. But there it's a little bit different. You don't hear of them being quite as aggressive in Mississippi as you do here either. It's you do get tired of hearing locals, and you do get tired of, you always want something more and more, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. You always want to get more evidence, better evidence. You want to talk about track casts. I mean, we've gotten track casts. I mean, when you were here, Wes, I mean, we had a track. Remember, you were like, well, show me where the track is. So we'll watch you wait until it comes up, and we'll pull it up, and we'll look at it together, you know?
Yeah.
But that track cast didn't come to fruition because of the doggone monsoon that we had, you know?
Yeah.
So it never set right and everything, but that was a whole trackway right there.
Let me ask you, when you were with the BFRO, and I'm sure you've heard stories, I don't know if you actually handled any encounters like this, but I know you've heard these same type of stories, Tim. When they seem to focus on a property, I've had several lately that people contact me. It's mainly down south, and they'll tell me about what's going on the property. And it's the same story over and over and over again. And it's what's interesting is none of these people know each other. Most of them aren't really into Bigfoot, but they'll describe the same type of behavior over and over and over again, like the house being slapped, coming and turning the doorknob like it's trying to get in, peeking in the windows. Do you think that's curiosity, or do you think that there's something more sinister going on. I'll give you an example. I know I was looking to have Bobby Hamilton on this last week, where he had one motioning for him to come to the window. And I know you know of the cowman story, but where they're actually coming up and focusing on a house, what do you think the intent there is?
Like I said, you got to look at commonalities. In these incidences, who's home at the time? Is there a male at the house? Is it females? Is it small children? Or is it children? What I have found, and it's a habituation site, it's the common phrase. One that I worked was, it was a couple, but the husband worked offshore and was not there, but 2 weeks out of the month. During the 2 weeks that he was gone, the activity would increase. But when he was there, it would decrease substantially. So I guess you got to kind of ask yourself that question. What's going on in the house, or who's at the house to draw their interest? An alpha male is not going to challenge an alpha male unless he thinks he can win.
So you think it's more of kind of sinister behavior going on with the, when they tend to come up to people's homes?
I wouldn't say that for sure, but I would say that I think some of it is sinister, and I think, but you know, then you get the, I know there's people that talk about the Erickson Project and things like that. But you know what? If you look at that, it was the woman that had a lot, most of the activity. I mean, she'd go out, you've seen probably the pancake footage, and this, she was out feeding them. That's another reason for habituation, is if you feed them, because I know that there are stories on some of the you know, First Nation people of, today, even though on the reservations, that they're feeding them, and then when they quit feeding them, bad things tend to happen. So you have to look at that.
Being in the BFRO, did you ever get a chance to look at that, the famous pancake footage that everyone talks about?
I did. You know, it's been several years since I've seen it, so I have to think back a little bit, but the best I can tell is, there was a, I don't know if it was a stomp or what it was exactly, or if it was a table they had put out there, but it was actually in the woods. It was a little trail that went into the woods behind this property. And she would take pancakes, or she would take things and put them out there. And then apparently they would give them equipment, the people there, some equipment to video. So they had like a deer stand, camouflage, that kind of stuff, and they'd sit up there. And that's how they got that footage. But I don't, you know, from what I can tell, it's like anything else. It wasn't exactly the best footage out there.
What's the one Sean was talking about? He was telling me about one, and I don't know if you saw it or not. It's when we were out there in Texas. May not have been the pancake footage, but he was telling me about some of the Erickson footage that he was privy to from being in the BFRO. And he said one of the videos he looked at, he said that it was pretty close from about the chest up of this creature. It's reaching down, it's eating. And I asked him, so what did it look like? And he said it was probably the ugliest thing he's ever seen. It said it had canines. It had a black tongue. He said it had a black mouth. He thought it was female. And he said it's not what you would picture a Bigfoot looking like. He said it was just the ugliest thing he's ever seen in his life.
I did not see that footage. I've seen the one where they come out. There was a couple that were circulated through when you were in there that they kind of showed if you were on expedition and stuff. But it was, you know, the one I saw, they came out of the woods, two of them did, and were walking along the fence line, and then they went back in the woods. And that was, but he's right. I mean, and actually the particular fellow that did a lot of the research for that project and everything said that, he said they're just pathetic looking. It's like they've had a hard life. But that group up there, in Kentucky, but you know, that they're very pathetic looking. They're not what you think. These don't particularly look like Patty. Prior to now, you know, before, I thought that they were all black. They all look like Patty, the same body style. And then I've learned differently here. So now, and then through, you know, even some of your podcasts with your witnesses and things like that, the Patty style tend to be more in the Pacific Northwest than some of the northern areas, but not to say that we don't have them here, because yes, they have been seen in Texas, Louisiana, and whatnot. But you also see another, I hate to say another kind, because I really think they're kind of the same, but they're just a little bit different. And I think that's probably an example of finding a little bit different ones in that Kentucky footage. That's, I guess, my opinion on that part, anyway.
what are some of the descriptions that you hear that are different from, say, the Patterson-Gimlin film?
Okay, well, you know the Patterson-Gimlin film, you know, the conical head is always a common thing that you see when they discuss it with the black ones. The big, 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 huge muscular bodies, almost like, you know, if you think about Patty, she looks like a big football player, you know, with breasts. That's the kind of the body style, the big lumbering, but they don't really lumber when they walk, they glide. But, you know, they have that big body like that. The ones down here, you will see that from time to time, but those sightings here are much rarer than this other kind. I'll give you an example of the first sighting that I had in Texas. We were camped, there were like 7 or 8 of us, and we were camped exactly where you were camped here. Sean Sauls, Larry Sauls, Sean's dad, myself, Glenn, Bob Truskowski, several of the guys were there, and it was raining. And we were actually going to call it quits. Then you had 4 trucks. There was 1 truck already parked, and you had 4 trucks come in a circular area, and one backed in, one pulled around, and then I parked over by the tree line. And we got out, and everybody got out pretty much, you know, park, jump out, get out, start moving around. You got 8 guys over there. Well, Larry had his headlight on, and he had his door open to his car with the dome light. And he's in there messing with something in his truck or whatever. So the dome light illuminated behind him along with his headlight that he had on. And Sean was at the other truck. And I was probably about 15 feet, maybe 10 feet away from Larry, looking in his direction. We're sitting there, we're having a conversation actually about if we're going to leave or not because of the weather. And then about that time, here's the commonality again. What did just rose up from the ground was the Squatch. And I knew exactly when I saw it, what it was. But it stood up, it had its right arm bent 90 degrees at the elbow, and it had its wrist bent 90 degrees with its fingers down. And it had these big, massive shoulders, and it had a little round head. And then at these shoulders kind of deep down into a skinnier waist, and I could see it in my mind's eye right now with that arm bent, this long shaggy hair hanging off the arms. It's 8 feet behind Larry, and he never knew it was there. And by the time I said, get the clear, there's a Squatch, and I said it just like that, get the clear, there's a Squatch right now. It had run, 30 yards? Into the tree line, and Sean got the clear, and he's looking, and I didn't move. I stepped there, me and Glenn, we were looking at it. He was had his back to it, and I was looking, and I said, hey, Sean, do you have a hit on the clear? And he didn't say anything. And I said, Sean, do you have a, and I fully expected him to say, no, I don't see anything. I said, Sean, do you have a hit on the clear? And he said, yeah, I've got it. Do you know that everybody saw that thing through the clear that night? Everybody. It had went over to there, and it laid down on the ground, and it kept pushing up and raising its head, looking up. You could see it. The most people saw it was from about the waist up, as it would push itself up and look, and the movement of it was so weird, just the speed of it. But that was most definitely not a Patty-style Bigfoot, Patty-style Squatch. It was most definitely this other kind that we encounter down here. But that's not to say that the Patty style and this style don't hang out together, because, you know, we've got a video of a Patty style black one and one of these other ones in the same footage. One's standing up and goes from the middle of the screen to the left when you're looking at the video. The other one comes up from the right side and runs straight at the guy that's walking in front, and then it veers off and goes to the right and out of frame. It's an amazing piece of footage, actually.
I don't think a lot of people understand why guys like you don't release footage. And, you know, it's anytime you release anything, it gets so torn apart. It's kind of like the Bigfoot community loves to eat their own. you know what I mean? So to speak, they love to eat their own. They cannibalize on their own. And it's kind of a shame too, because a lot of this footage, I think if there was a lot less attacks on people in the community and outside of the community, I think more footage would come forward. I think a lot more people would be willing to share. It's so hard now even to get people to say, hey, I saw this, or, hey, I came across this. People who have real footage don't want to bring it forward. And I can kind of see why.
Yeah, we have footage. We have FLIR. We put some out there and people, it is, you know, the funny thing is, Wes, like I said, you've been down here, so you know. And this was filmed in the summertime, believe it or not. All right. We had a piece of footage. We were actually up around the campfire and set it and set a FLIR back. Now, it's not the best footage, which is why we put it out. You know what I mean? But it's a squatch, and it comes running up the hill, and it's throwing crap at us. When we put that out there, just a little bit of that footage out there, we've had everything from people saying that I'm running up and down the hill naked. Okay, really? Not there, and not in July, and there ain't no freaking way. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. And you're right. You're absolutely right. We cannibalize our own in this community. The people that typically are the hoaxers, I mean, you figure them out pretty quick. You know, the Rick Dyers out there and everything like that. And hey, you know, I can't fault Rick Dyer for being a hoaxer. He's a hoaxer, you know? He fully admits it. You know? Well, he is what he is. So he puts anything out, well, then you already know. But, you know, when you get this person or that person putting out a piece of video, everybody wants to take it. They want to break it down. They want to do this. When that may not even been the focus of the whole video to begin with. It bothers me that some of the videos that I've been with Bob Garrett on and we filmed and, somebody takes it and breaks it down. And like, I'll tell you right now, that 3 mile in video, I'll talk about that because it just aggravates the freaking crap out of me. The 3 mile in video that we did.
Yeah, explain the video for the audience, you know, because as if they had never seen it. Explain what's in the video and then kind of go into your frustration.
Okay. Anytime we go out, we take a video camera and we like to document. We like to video document just what we're doing. It doesn't matter if we even get anything. We just want to document it. And we kind of want to teach people and show people. This was our original idea. We wanted to teach people and show people what we did and how we did it. Now, obviously, the camera's not on the entire time because you'd have about 45 minutes to 2 hours of just us walking in. Because, you know, we just walk in, you know, 2-3 miles sometimes, 4 miles sometimes. We don't go where people go. We go other places. We went to this one place when we called, and Bob videoed as we went in periodically, you know, this piece, whatever. We're just showing the area and showing what to look for. And every once in a while, you might get lucky and you might get something. You know what I mean? That's not what we're doing it for. We like to show people that we're setting up layers and how we're doing it and how we're doing our research. On the 3 mile in video, we went in there. We're walking around. Bob is filming. Just filming everything. And, you know, he'll see some interesting things and he'll zoom in and stuff like that. Well, I remember when he put it out, the original first one, when he put it out, people started saying, oh, I see something at this time frame or that time frame. Well, I'm going to tell you honestly, I didn't see nothing when I was out there and I didn't see anything in the video. Then next thing I know, oh, there's this cloak and Bigfoot in the film. I'm like, really? Okay, I don't, whatever. So anyway, this particular person, he takes it and he does a breakdown. Now, he did a pretty interesting breakdown of it and I looked at it and whatever and, you know, great, whatever. But what he's actually showing you that, and he doesn't, I don't think he even passes judgment on it, the cloaking one. He just poses the question out there. Is this an entity or a cloaking Bigfoot? You know, stealth Bigfoot or entity, I think is the name of the footage or whatever. Well, you know, none of us saw anything. We just, Bob zoomed in because he saw some movement. That was it. That was about the extent of that. If you look at the rest of the whole video, all we do is go up there and we look at the trail that we're on and we look at this and we set the FLIRs. And that's pretty much the video, and we leave. We set the FLIR, set them up, and we leave. And that's the whole purpose of doing our videos. But they found this. Now, granted, I'm not going to argue that there wasn't something there. There may very well could be. What it was, I have no idea. But I'll tell you, it wasn't no damn cloaking Bigfoot. What I can tell you is the sun was at that setting stage, but it was still sunny. And the sun was facing towards the camera. And the autofocus on that camera, when you zoom in, the autofocus, it takes this little, it has to find something to make its focus on. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right.
So if
yeah,
you have
it's trying
something
to focus.
Moving there, yeah, so if you have something moving there, you're going to get that distortion or that shimmer, and I think that's what everybody's saying. You go, you got the freaking cloaking Bigfoot. Well, I don't think that's the case. I think you got a case of the autofocus with the camera, with the sunlight on that particular model of camera. Now, I've looked at it. Do I think something was there? I think something was probably there. What it is, I cannot tell you. But I can tell you, everybody said, well, yeah, it runs from left to right. No, it doesn't. Because if it ran from left to right, there is no way in hell I wouldn't have seen it, Bob wouldn't have seen it, and Travis wouldn't have seen it because of the area we were in. You don't get that from the video. All it pretty much did was probably take a step or two, and then it ran straight back. And when you look at the video, there's some more pond fawns moving further back as it goes further deeper into the woods. So it's running away from us. Whatever it is, it could have been a deer. I don't know. I didn't see it. But it wasn't a dog on Cloaking Bigfoot. And that's for the record.
Yeah, it's one of those things.
So that's
the
kind of thing that I think aggravates me. You know, you're going to take somebody else's work and then you're going to put your own conjecture and everything into it and you make your own anecdotal evidence and try to make it this and try to make it that. And a lot of times, some of the people with what we put out there and what we've done, they use the liar, pants on fire freaking offensive. I'm like, really?
And, you know, we don't have to get too much into the Bigfoot community, but I think the biggest problem that I've seen, and I've always seen this, and that's why when the whole thing happened, you know, with me and people questioning my encounter, a lot of people might be shocked to know it bothered me, but it didn't bother me that much in the sense that the Bigfoot community is crazy, man. All these other shows, all these other quote-unquote researchers, and I will say everyone, but most of your researchers out there, they're so desperate to be the guy. They're so desperate to, and it's kind of sad, really. It's kind of sad that is the focus of their life, that they try so desperately. It's like everyone thinks we're curing cancer here, and we're not. We're trying to solve a mystery, but we're not curing cancer here. And there's just this ego and all the, you know, so they take something that you guys have done, spin it, and say there's a cloaking Bigfoot. Well, why do that? What is the motive behind that? You know, what is the, cause like you said, I mean, it could be lights. It could be all different sorts of things that cause that to give it kind of a weird appearance. You know what I mean?
That's absolutely what happens. I think what's the term, pareidolia?
Yeah. Pareidolia.
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, I think that happens a lot. I mean, and I think that's a trap that some people get into. And you know, you originally asked me why I don't post anything. I don't post anything for a bunch of reasons. Number one, if you're interested and you want to see stuff, then get out there and do it yourself. Number one, I do it for my own stuff and I'll share with, I'm a very sharing person with what I've gotten, but doggone it, you got to know me, as you probably know, and I'm more than happy to send you a recording I've gotten or anything like that. But I'm not going to post it somewhere just to put my research out there to say, hey, look at me, look what I got. I don't care. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not going to put out my videos. I'm not going to put out any FLIR that I've gotten. I'm not going to do it. Because number one, I don't need the aggravation of everybody thinking they know what they don't. I'm not going to play into those games with people like that. You know, I honestly just want to do my thing and I get what I get and you don't see it, I'm sorry. You know, go with me.
Isn't it kind of a weird community, though? Isn't it kind of, you know, everyone wants to solve this? And I don't think that it necessarily, I've heard people say everyone's trying to be the guy to solve it. I don't think that's it. I think everyone, a lot of these different researchers, they want to be the go-to guy. They want to be the quote-unquote expert. They want to be, and I hate to break it to everyone, no one's an expert. No one knows, no one has the answers on, we all theorize through our experiences. We all go through and give our opinions based on what we've experienced. But it's just frustrating, man, because it's just such a weird, weird community. And it's not even a community I ever really wanted to be involved with in the first place. I think I've said that from day one in the show. But for some reason, you become part of this weird community. The Bigfoot community is like the uncle you never invite to Thanksgiving because he gets drunk and he makes, you know, makes an ass out of himself. That's the Bigfoot community. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't blame you guys for for not sharing. You know, I realize there's clicks and everything, and you guys really are the real deal. I mean, when I went out there, I was shocked. I remember thinking after day two, when I was out there with you guys, I remember thinking, God, I wish I had a television crew with me, because there'd be so much stuff to capture, you know?
Oh, yeah. Very interesting when you come out here and you do this. And, you know, it's not just where we're at. It almost seems like it's all of East Texas. It's Louisiana. I think you actually asked me, well, you guys might have it a little better than most because of where you're at. Well, we might. But, you know, I think that's because of the city of Houston, the city of Dallas, the city of San Antonio. You have these major, major, major metropolitan areas. You know, the city of Houston is the third largest city in the United States, or just about. So you think of the landmass that it takes up. Well, you know, if you've got a population here and you've got a larger population, they don't really have, you don't have the square mileage here that you would in, like, say, Northern California, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, you know, and then you've got, you know, in the Houston, Conroe, Sugarland, Metroplex area, basically, you've got, you know, like 8 million people, 8 million people, all right here. So they don't have a place to go, and it keeps shrinking and shrinking and shrinking, so you got a large portion, a large population in a small area. And I think that's part of the reason that we have all that stuff, you know.
Well, and I tend to agree with you. I think, you know, in that area that we were at, where we were getting all those vocals, you know, I left for the Houston, or was it the George Bush Intercontinental Airport, and we're only talking like a 25-minute drive, and I was there. And so you're by this major airport, and we really weren't that far out. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, we really weren't that far out. It's not like we had to hike 20 miles in to a remote location. And that's a lot of things a lot of other people out there, I don't think, understand, who maybe might live in a city and are listening to this, that you really have to get way out in the woods. And that's not really the case, especially out there. I think they're kind of squeezed into these areas, and that's why you probably have the aggression, but that's why you hear the vocals when you're out there. It's, what was it, Jim Lansdale I had on last week, and one of the quotes that made me laugh, he said, if you can go out to Texas and you don't hear or see a Sasquatch, there's something wrong with you. And he's right, because if you go out there, you're going to hear something. You're going to probably see something. If you don't see anything, you're definitely going to hear them. There's really nothing else that it could be. A lot of times when you hear these vocals,
Jim Lansdale and Bob Garrett, I think you said it, they're cut from the same cloth. And the thing that I've learned the most from both of them, you gotta go where they are, but you need to know what you're looking for. It doesn't matter. This is what kills me. I mean, you can get these things on game trail cameras. People argue, oh, they can see the IR from this or that. Well, I don't know if they can or not, but I know for a fact you can get them on game trail cameras. And a good one is the Jacob's Creature. You've probably seen that. That is, without a doubt, a Sasquatch. There are other pictures that they've never released, and I think they probably won't ever release them because of, you know, for very good reason. But if you just go pick a spot in the woods and set the camera up and thinking that you're going to get a Sasquatch, I think you're going to fail. I think you need to go out. I think you need to look for signs, and I think you need to put a camera out, and I think you need to leave it out for 3 weeks, a month, are better. But you have to put it in an area that they're in. And I think that's where people fail with the game cameras. That's where, when we go out, we look for certain things. We look for tracks. We look for well-used trails. We look for this. We look for that. If we don't see it, we don't set the flares up. If we see that, we put the flares up. That doesn't mean they're going to come back through in front of the flare, because you're talking about a 2x2x2 screen, and you're only taking about just a fraction of the area you're trying to surveil. I mean, maybe that day, one day they come this way, but the other day they come behind the flare, you know, or they come a different way. They don't always use the same trail twice. They don't ever come to an area the same way twice. Very, very frustrating when you're doing that. But I think the game trail cameras, believe it or not, are not a bad thing. You put them up high, you angle them down, you make sure you're in an area, and you leave it and let it go. And I think a lot of people fail when it comes to doing that, because they just took them out, let them go for 2 or 3 days, and then come back and get them. Oh, there's nothing on there but a deer.
Yeah, and for people listening, the Jacob's creature for people who aren't aware of it, it was a creature caught on game cam, and it was on all fours, wasn't it, Tim? It was eating apples or something?
No. The Jacob's creature is out of Pennsylvania. The first one that you see is a picture of the creature, and it's on the side of a mountain, basically. It's got I call it getting your golf ball stance. It's bent over with one arm down and one arm back and one leg back. So it's picking its golf ball up. That's the best way I can say to describe it. The second picture is it's bent over at 90 degrees pretty much at the waist with its nose to the ground, sniffing the ground. The interesting thing about it is the guy had a salt lick over there. I don't know what the Squatch was doing.
Wasn't that the one? It was kind of skinny and it was like patchy, had patchy hair. And people were saying it was a bear.
Yeah, it was a mangy bear. That's most definitely not a bear.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a bear when I saw it. It's something to where I wish they'd release all of the footage on it or all of the images that were taken, because what you see definitely doesn't look like a bear to me, but, you know, I wasn't there.
I guess what you see whenever you, if you saw the regular pictures, would probably blow a lot of people away, but I'm not going to get into that. I don't think I can. But then again, people, this is another example. Somebody got a game cam picture of something, and then everybody just is going to freaking butcher it. Well, this guy wasn't a Bigfoot researcher. He just got these pictures out there. And yeah, there are bear cubs in there, but this is most definitely not a bear cub.
Yeah, one last question I want to ask you, because I'm going to get it from the audience if I don't ask it. What signs do you look for? Let's say you're not a tracker like most of your group is. And you're out looking for these creatures. What are some things that you guys look for? What are some things you would recommend for people to look for?
I hate to disappoint everybody, I guess, but we're actually looking for tracks. We're looking for impressions. We're looking for this. We're looking for well-used trails. Well-used trails, the trails are beaten down. They're worn, I guess, is the best way to describe them. They're not always as wide as you think they are, and you have to think about how they walk. Look for the trails. Look for that. There's certain, I'm not a stick structure guy, but there are some things that you can look for as far as stick structure, you know, obvious tree breaks and things like that. These big bows, these arches that people see and everything like that. 99.9 of those I just missed, because those occur naturally in nature. You can go into any forest in the world and find those. And that's because it's a younger sapling that doesn't get the light and it bows over. But if you have one that's bowed over like that with another one pinning it down or something like that, then that might be of interest. But you know, I've seen a lot of things that people say are purported Sasquatch sign. And then like, really, it just occurs in nature, you know?
Yeah. A lot of it's
natural. It has to be pretty obvious, you know, a whole tree pulled up by its roots with the end of it sticking out and a root ball on the top. That's interesting. Those sorts of things. But really, predominantly, what we look for are tracks and trails and things like that, seeing if they're being used. But I have the advantage of having somebody that's researched this area for, you know, 30 years, so.
Yeah, and like I was saying, most of you guys are trackers. Most of you guys are actual trackers. When you go in and look for them, you know, there's so many things to where, I know you don't consider yourself a tracker, but I definitely would consider you a tracker, because I know the second night we were out there, the second or third night, I mean, you went into full-blown tracker mode looking, and I think that's when you guys found the footprint. But I think it's interesting, a lot of people, that's probably one of the main questions I get, you know, what to look for. And there's always more to it than just, hey, I'll send you pictures of scat and broken tree branches. There's a lot more to it than that. I know down there, a lot of times where you're at, if you follow the hogs, you'll find the Sasquatches.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. You know, I think when you had Mo on, you were talking about, I think he was mentioning about the two that we saw in the daytime that we actually got on film. We were actually tracking hogs, and we went across the Sasquatch prints, and we tracked them on down, came out to these two washouts. Or dugouts underneath the bank, and it's kind of a hard to describe, but you know, you got to put the bank up with creek actually filming, we're looking at these dugouts in there that were really interesting. You know, Mo is down here, and Bob are sitting there looking at this 18-inch track, and I'm up there, and I'm looking straight ahead, and I'm looking at two of them, and I didn't even know I was looking at them until the one started moving its head. It would look at us, and it would look at the other one, and look at us, and look at the other one. You know, they told me, hey, come down here, look at this track. I'm like, uh-uh. You guys come up here and look at the two squatches that are sitting here looking at me. And they did, so we all three sat there and watched them. I tried my best to get it on video. I couldn't get it as well as I wanted to because I couldn't look at the viewfinder and keep my eyes trained on them without losing them. You know what I mean? So the video I got is what I got. It's not the best, but, you know, it is what it is. It's not like they're going to be 5 feet away from you at every time, you know? So you kind of have to take your evidence and, you know, something like that I'm not going to put out. I'm not going to put out anything that's questionable. I'm not going to put out anything that's like pareidolia. I'm not going to put out anything with a red circle around it and say, oh, look at this. You know, I'm just not going to do it. There's no point in doing that.
Yeah.
You open yourself up to a lot of problems when you do that.
Yeah.
I think the best thing to do is if people want to learn or people want to teach is they have to get a mentor that knows what they're doing. They have to spend the time and they have to go in the woods and they have to do it. Sometimes you have to go in pretty deep. Sometimes you don't. It just depends on where you're at. Depends on what you're doing. But it's educating yourself and looking and learning the sign to look for. That's the best thing I can tell you. You know, like my friend in Mississippi, I think he lives in Ackerman. He actually lives in a perfect spot. He lives across the street from the National Forest. He goes up there all the time. He goes by himself. I don't know how good of a tracker he is, but I mean, he goes up there and he finds a lot of interesting stuff. He's got a lot of good, interesting, things that he comes back with. He gets a lot of evidence. So, I mean, you know, it's just about finding the area and researching what you gotta do your homework first, I guess, while looking at.
Yeah. And I think we both agree that going out by yourself is a bad idea. I mean, I think you and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you and I are of the theory that these things do kill people. Are they out every moment that they're awake looking to kill someone? No. But do they kill people, and have they killed people in the past? I would definitely say yes.
Oh, yeah, I would say. They're not the cute, cuddly, fuzzy little forest creatures that people seem to think. You know, I mean, every time you see a bear, does a bear kill you? No. Will a bear kill you? Yes. I guess that's the best analogy I've got. If you run into... I don't know if you have grizzly bears where you're at. Do you have grizzly bears or no?
No, we have black bear.
The big black bear? Okay, well, every time you see a black bear, pretty much they just run away, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say 95% of the time they'll run from you. Out here, okay, it's mainly cougar that'll get you.
Yeah, but the black bear will kill and eat you, though, if they...
Yeah, I mean, if you catch them on the wrong day or you corner them or there's a mother with its cubs, absolutely they'll kill you and probably not even think twice about it.
So how is a friendly forest creature any different?
Right. Right.
I guess that's my point. I think we got to use common sense when we're dealing with this. Are they a wild animal? Yes. Are they a little bit more than that? I'd have to say yes, too. Do you really want to take a gamble with your life if you run into this thing and think that it's going to be sit down and sing kumbaya with you and have a cup of tea? I don't think that's going to happen. I think, you know, the best case scenario is it's going to go its direction and you're going to go yours.
Yeah, that's the best case scenario. Sometimes, like what happened with you guys when you guys were out with the BFRO or when Bob and I were out, sometimes they don't run the other way. You know, sometimes they will kind of find a way to try and corner you. But you're right. Best case scenario is you guys are both going to turn and go opposite directions. And people just need to be aware when they go out. Whether you believe in Sasquatch or you don't, I would say don't go out alone and carry a firearm, for God's sakes, and just be aware of your surroundings because you never know what's going to be out there, especially out in Texas. Everything can kill you in Texas. Tim, thanks for being on the show. I really do appreciate it. I appreciate you coming on and sharing all of the encounter stories and stuff you've experienced.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Want to thank everyone for listening tonight. If you get a chance, please visit us at SasquatchChronicles.com. Hope everyone had a great weekend, had a great Sunday. On SasquatchChronicles.com, I've been doing a show on Wednesday night I'm looking to expand that to Friday night as well. But if you've had an encounter and you'd like to come on the show, email me at wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. And when you send your email, please send your contact information too as well along in your email. So we don't play email tag back and forth. If you include all your contact information, I'd love to have you on. I'd love to hear your story. Again, it's wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to come on the show, I want to thank everyone again. I want to give a shout out to Tyler D on the website. Tyler, thanks for all the kind comments. Really do appreciate it. Other than that, everyone, have a great night, and I will see you next time.
Something quieter.